Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Of the Hagman Report. Today is Monday, September 18th, 2017. We're coming to you live from our television and radio studios here in Northwest Pennsylvania. Joe Hagman, the co-host here, along with John Robertson, filling in for my dad for one more night as they make their way back from Branson, Missouri. All the images and things we've seen and people we've talked to who attended the conference say it was really something special. And we got some behind-the-scenes clips from my dad and some other people. I know a lot of people were there, and hearing from them over the weekend, it was nice to see that event went off successfully, and it looks like it was a really good time. I hope that live stream, you can access that for some time after the event, or they at least do the DVDs quickly, as I want to, you know, we didn't get to go, and I did not take the weekend and watch the event. But I would definitely like to see that. We got a great show lined up for you tonight, folks. Our first guest is Michael Thompson of WorldNet Daily. Eric, did you say we're good? We're going to bring him on in just a moment. But first, we have a quick word from one of our sponsors, and we're going to play that now.
Doug Hagman checking in from Branson, Missouri. What a conference. Portion of tonight's broadcast brought to you by ZipRecruiter.com. Hey, are you hiring? You looking for that special person to take care of business like business at our studio is taken care of? ZipRecruiter.com. That's the place to go. ZipRecruiter.com/Hagman. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Hagman. One more time. You can try for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Hagman. More on that later.
All right. We're going to jump right into it now with our first guest, Michael Thompson. And first, John, let me bring you on. It's great for you to be here. I know we did three shows last week on the evening show. And again, folks, John and I have a show, the Hagman Daily Show, airs each weekday, 2 to 3 p.m., and you can find the live and archive on Global Star Radio Network Channel 3, as well as Blog Talk Radio or any podcasting application. You can get the archive there. John, great to be here.
Well, Joe, thank you so much, and greetings and God's blessings to everyone who's chosen to join us here this evening on Monday, September 18th of 2017, of course. It has been such a blessing, such an honor, really, to sit in for Doug, who, of course, is in transit. They are headed back home from the big event this weekend, Joe, and I'm sure we'll get little snippets of sort of behind the scenes of what Doug's experiences were like throughout the week. I couldn't ask for a better guest to kick off Monday evening with than this gentleman who I cannot overemphasize how much Michael Thompson has done for the Hagman Report over the past year. We've been acquainted now for about a year. Michael Thompson is over at WorldNet Daily, WND.com. And he has just brought such an amazing host of new guests to our program. And not only that, he's just a professional and an easygoing, super nice guy to work with. And Michael Thompson, welcome to the Hagman Report. How are you, sir?
Guys, I'm doing fantastic. I can't see you, but I think you can see me.
Yeah, we can see you, Michael. It's great to have you on the show.
Welcome, Michael.
Guys, this is my second time coming on, first time where we had the video rocking and rolling, and I'm really excited to come on at such an exciting time in our nation's history and to be working with you guys. You guys do such a phenomenal job in bringing forth truth, definitely a different vibe than what we saw last night at the Emmys when Middle America and your guys' audience was castigated and laughed at the entire telecast. And now, you know, just get a chance to have some fun and laugh at them.
You know, I did not watch any of the clips, but I read a number of articles today about the Emmys, and, you know, Drudge really had a bunch of information up there earlier today. You know, they called it just a 3-hour Trump bashing fest. And at least in my I've never really paid attention to these award shows, but it'd be interesting to hear other people out there if they've ever witnessed an award show or even the culture of Hollywood that's become so politicized. And it's interesting to see these people, you know, make their, what they believe are, you know, moral arguments, whether it's for global warming or for immigration. But more often than not, these people, they sound unhinged and they look like fools when they get into this, you know, subject matter. Because a lot of times, especially for every average everyday Americans who are, you know, working hard every day and, you know, building their family, building up their lives to make a better life for themselves, and they see these entitled, you know, liberal-minded Hollywood types that come out and just lecture them about how bad they are, how bad their president is. And I'm sure it gets very old very fast, especially coming from, you know, these kind of people.
Well, let's be blunt. There's a lot of things that we could say negative about President Trump thus far and hold him accountable for the promises he made in the campaign trail, which it's somewhat shocking how many ways he's gone back on a lot of his agenda that he hoped to implement. But you're right, the way that they treated your average American, again, just the way that they want to force this narrative of Donald Trump being the head white supremacist in the country, again, it's turning a lot of people off. And if Trump could just go forward with a really pro-American, pro-middle-class, and pro-working-class agenda, I think that 2018 would be just an unbelievable sweep for the Republicans, but I don't think they're going to do that, unfortunately.
Interesting, interesting point of view, interesting leadoff. And again, our guest, for those just joining us, is Michael Thompson from WorldNet Daily. This is his return appearance with us on the Hagmann Report, and hopefully the second of many more to come. Interestingly, Michael, you were just making some points about the difference between candidate Trump and what we're seeing from President Donald Trump. Let's extrapolate that a little bit. Give us just what in your opinion, are the two or three biggies.
The New York Times blog 538, it's a fantastic analysis, wonderful site to read some of the best data available. They recently put out an article that showcased that Trump supporters in every state overwhelmingly thought immigration was the only issue that mattered in the 2016 election. And what we've seen with Donald Trump in office has been a complete departure from the candidate we saw who was talking about rescinding unconstitutional DACA day one. I mean, gosh, this guy was even talking about Trump deportation force to start rounding up illegal immigrants. And what we've seen recently is a president who could have allowed DACA to end in the courts because nine Republican-controlled states and the attorney generals in those states had actually passed or are actually suing the federal government over DACA. And all the attorney general had to do in that case, Attorney General Sessions, not pursue it in court. DACA is gone. But instead, we now have this strange dinner with Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. I think immigration has to be the biggest disaster. I think also some of the conversation we're seeing today, President Trump goes to the UN, and I can remember when Donald Trump said, Americanism, not globalism, will be our credo. And today he talked about making the UN great again. What?
Saw that.
What? I kind of thought we were talking about pulling out of the United Nations. Strange stuff, guys.
Well, the way Donald Trump is, I would say, not in his defense, just in general, that with the UN, if the option to leave is not on the table, obviously he's going to, you know, want to make the UN great again if he can't leave it. But Michael, let me ask you this. Do you think that Trump is not, where do you think the issues, with him not going all the way like he was talking about in the campaign come from? Do you think they are from, those around him saying, no, you can't do this, you can't do that, you should do this instead? Do you think it's, what do you think it is?
Combination of what you just said, the fact that he has no ideology whatsoever to speak of himself, doesn't have a coherent narrative that he focuses on. I know quite for a fact that Ann Coulter's book on Adios America did play a large part in his evolution, so to speak, to understand the importance of immigration. But as we've seen with the departure of Gorka, as we've seen with the firing. I can't remember the other gentleman's name. Was it Rich?
I don't.
The gentleman who wrote that fantastic essay on the merger of globalism with radical Islam, and he was basically pushed out before Gorka left. And of course, with Bannon, who I just think Bannon realized after the debacle surrounding the firing of the FBI, the head of the FBI, just how bad that was and what a turning point that was for the Trump presidency. Even though you had this trumped up, ridiculous witch hunt going on with the whole Russia narrative, which is totally false, as everyone listening to this show, we don't need to insult people's intelligence here. My point is, Donald Trump doesn't have a specific ideology, but you only have one or two people who are presently in the pro-American, anti-globalist camp really advising him right now, and that would be Stephen Miller, and that would be Michael Anton, who famously wrote the Flight 93 essay that was so important to showcase how the 2016 election really was going to be something fundamental about a divergent paths where America could go, either doubling down on Hillary and what the elite and what we saw, of course, back at the Emmys, this really grotesque, cosmopolitan, coastal elite hatred of middle Americans, or Donald Trump playing footsie, best way to put it, playing footsie with middle Americans to win the presidency.
You know, that, I hope you're wrong in that, but you know, there's indications, and what you said about his ideology, not having an ideology, not having a narrative to focus on or fall back on, does explain a lot, and would explain a lot. And John, thanks for finding that name. John said Rich Hagan was the man who left just before
Higgins.
Gorka. Higgins. And Michael, did you see that Steve Bannon interview on 60 Minutes last week?
You know, I used to share emails 3 or 4 times a week with Steve Bannon before he was invited to become part of the Trump campaign. Steve Bannon is a personal hero of mine, and I did see the interview, and I recommend all your listeners go out and check it out. It's fantastic.
See, I didn't know much about Steve Bannon and what motivates him and why he has the views that he does, but it was a good interview, and I think he's a lot smarter than people give him credit for.
He's a Harvard MBA.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just think that if people don't know much about Bannon, I would urge them to watch that interview to get a better idea of who he really is. But kind of moving forward here, Michael, the Trump agenda, do you see what do you see coming down the pike? Do you see anything on taxes? Should we expect, what should we expect from Trump here before the end of the year versus what do you think is going to happen, if that's a good question to ask?
Gosh, great question, and a depressing one, because to answer it is to admit that I think this Republican Congress, I mean, again, the Republicans control 26 states completely. They control the House, they control the Senate, and they have the presidency. And what are they doing? Absolutely nothing. They're building a wall to stop the Trump agenda. And as we've seen, I think Trump, in his heart of hearts, legitimately wants to find a way to keep 800,000 to 1.5 million illegal immigrants here with DACA. And who cares about tax cuts? I mean, back in 1980, before Reagan's amnesty, I mean, I was born after Reagan's amnesty. So that tells you, you know, how old I am. But I've got a lot of family in California, and I can tell you California used to be a Republican bastion. And then guess what happens? You grant amnesty, you have that many millions more voters, and demography is, guess what, destiny. And California is the future for every state unless immigration controls are passed and we do see some form of deportation of illegals. You're going to see Arizona, you're going to see Georgia, you're going to see North Carolina, and you're going to even see the mighty vaunted Texas go blue. And so who cares about tax cuts if, you know, they're momentary, when the changes to America and the electorate, as we all know, Hispanics and Asians are vastly more interested in voting for the Democratic Party than they are the Republican Party. And that's not going to change as Bannon talks about how if the Democrats double down on identity politics, that's a great thing for Republicans. You know, maybe on a macro level, but on a micro level, look what's happened in California. Look what's happening in places like New York. Look what's happening in places like Illinois. So tax cuts, I just don't think that the Republicans who are up for reelection, and there are a lot of senators up for reelection and a lot of Congress, and every congressman, of course, I think that everyone is still shell-shocked by what happened in 2017 with Trump winning. But at the same time, I think that it might have been just an anomaly, and it's going back to business as usual. And I regret to say that unless something serious is done on immigration, I'll tell you one thing I wish Trump would do. I wish Trump would speak out on what's happened in St. Louis, guys. Black Lives Matter, Antifa terrorists are rioting in the name of a heroin dealer, kind of just like the Freddie Gray situation. And they're attacking private businesses, they're injuring cops, and my gosh, they went to the mayor of St. Louis's house, this white liberal woman who, by the way, her husband was actually murdered in their driveway by a black guy. I think this was like 10 years ago. My point is, you have such liberal delusion in these places like St. Louis, yet Trump won't come in and just say what needs to be said about something very pro cop, very pro law and order. That's the message that also won him the White House. Remember, guys, remember when Dallas happened in 2016, when the 5 white cops were killed by the Black Lives Matter supporter, 12 cops were shot. And it was a racial attack. It was a black on white racial attack. The day after, what did Hillary Clinton tweet? She said, white people need to listen more. How crazy can you be to think that that's what needs to happen after you have this terrible attack, which was racially motivated in a way that we're not supposed to ever, you know, talk about. But my point is this: Donald Trump needs to come out and talk about St. Louis, because they're canceling more and more public events, community events, because they don't have police to provide security, because the police are under assault. That's the kind of stuff I want to see Donald Trump talk about, because that has more permanence and more, that enables, that forces the left to go crazy when you actually have a president who supports the police, as opposed to talking about, you know, systemic bias and implicit bias and systemic racism within the police, the reason why we have even these arrests to begin with. That's the kind of stuff that's going to excite the base, so to speak, and get working class Americans who are just shocked by this barbaric Antifa, this Marxist behavior, that seemingly is allowed to run wild in America.
Well, Michael, you make some interesting points and some disconcerting points. Let's take a couple of them one at a time. First off, going back to your comments about the DACA situation. You and I are both old enough, we've been around long enough to recall the Elian Gonzalez optics back in the 1990s. And that, as you were making the comments about immigration writ large, DACA in particular, I started thinking two things. Number one, I think President Trump may have a certain fear of bad or poor optics at this point. And that kind of ties in vis-a-vis the media and how they treat him with what we saw last week with his meeting, his dinner with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. Is it possible that President Trump realizes that he has a, I don't want to say an image problem, because that doesn't really carry the levity per se, but a communication problem? Perhaps he's suffering from the fact that in the United States in 2017, to a degree, perception is reality. And lastly, Michael, do you get the sense that perhaps President Trump is beginning to feel like he has no friends in the Beltway?
Oh, he has absolutely no friends in the Beltway. That is, as someone who's in the Beltway could tell you, they hate this guy with every ounce of energy and being in their body, every fiber. About DACA and about perception, it's interesting you use those words, because trending on Twitter today and yesterday, I believe, was Trump is a white supremacist, whereas Donald Trump has never said anything that could be even construed as I would argue, even construed as racism, you know, white supremacists, anything like that. On the contrary, Donald Trump is a colorblind, to his credit. He truly does believe that everyone should be treated equal before the law. And there are rumors going around that he actually is excited for the first time in his presidency because he's getting a lot of positive press for his stance on DACA and wanting to work with the Democrats across the aisle. But they're still saying on Twitter, all these leftists, all these verified blue check marks on Twitter, they're still saying this guy's a white supremacist. Go back a couple weeks ago to when The Economist ran a picture of Donald Trump with a Klansman bullhorn, as if he's, you know, the figurehead of this insignificant organization. Then there was another thing of, I think it was on Time or one of the magazines, another thing that tried to position Trump in this manner. John, regardless of what Donald Trump does to work with the left, they're still going to hate him. They're not going to build any statues to Donald Trump if he passes DACA. You know, they're going to keep tearing all the ones to Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and renaming schools and roads for the founding fathers while they laugh at this guy, who helped turn not just California permanently blue, but the entire country permanently blue.
Well, Michael, again, interesting points. And I wonder, looking back at the debacle last night that was the Emmy presentation, having been a veteran of Hollywood feature film and television production, I know you know this, Michael, but I want to inform our audience. The Emmys are not some sort of democratic, grassroots, type of organization. The Emmys are what you could consider the epitome of the collectivist hive that is Hollywood. The decision makers, and some of the retired decision makers, in Hollywood really are the people who cast the votes and decide who gets a statue and who doesn't. And I've actually worked on a few programs, incidentally, where we did win some Emmys. But when you look at this collectivist mentality, and to remind our listeners, and thank you, Michael, we had just this past Friday Charles Sasser on in the third hour, Crushing the Collective. I think what we're seeing here, Michael Thompson, is a situation where this Trump's a racist thing is what's stuck. The mainstream, fake stream media has been throwing it against the wall since the day he was, well, really since the day he was elected, but certainly since the inaugural. And this racism one has stuck. And then we see these explosions, these epicenters of extreme violence, like St. Louis. And when we look at St. Louis, it appears that President Trump has a communications problem. Michael?
Agree with that entirely. I think that he's so quick to tweet. I mean, remember the other day when he tweeted those strange things about DACA and about, we can't let these kids go. They've been in this country. You know, they didn't come here. They didn't choose to come here. Their parents brought them here. That was the most worrisome tweet I've ever seen Donald Trump do, because regardless of that, what you call the collectivist mind, they're going to still pounce upon this idea that has branded Trump from the left, that he is this racist, that he is this bigot, that he is the embodiment of the last gasp of white America. You saw that after the election. What did the guy on CNN say? This was a white lash or something. It was crazy. It was nutty. But it's what sticks. And I wish I could say that Donald Trump was going to be hiring some really good people in communications, but the only people that Donald Trump seems to be hiring right now are Beltway types who were working for his competition within the GOP primaries. He, you know, personnel, they say it all the time, personnel is policy. And he's made it his policy to hire few people who had anything to do with the MAGA concept during the primaries. So, some people you've had on the show, I won't name their names, you know who I'm talking about. They had been in discussion during the transition team to work for the Trump administration. Some very good young people about my age. I'm 33. And unfortunately it just didn't happen because the swamp took over the transition team and They are in firm control of the presidency, and they are not letting anyone with an ounce of loyalty to that Americanism concept. You have to have that loyalty. Just look who's in charge of the UN for the United States, who he has, you know, delegating policy with the UN. The former governor of South Carolina, who is a committed globalist. Globalism, unfortunately, is what motivates the people who are the architects behind the scenes of the Trump communication team. And if I could say one thing real quick.
We got 1 minute left, Michael, so go for it.
Oh, perfect. WND, we're so happy to be partners with Hagmann Report. We do immediate articles based on the interviews that that Doug and everyone performs here with our personalities. We've had some amazing personalities appear on the Hagmann Report. And I just want to do something tonight, and I hope you guys can start doing a little bit more. If you guys go to superstore.wnd.com, superstore.wnd.com, put whatever you want into your cart, anything on the site. We have awesome stuff from conservative books, fantastic Christian books and documentaries, awesome prepper stuff. Put anything you want in your cart. When you check out, use promo code HAGMAN10. That's HAGMANN and the numerals 1 and 0. Put that into your as a promo code. You're going to get 10% off your order. And more importantly, a portion of that sale is going to go to help out the Hagmann Report, to help out their operations, to help their expansion. And we're just so happy to be able to work with a burgeoning voice and the patriotic movement, and just one of the industry leaders, I would say, when it comes to doing just phenomenal, phenomenal work.
Michael Thompson, thank you so much. WorldNet Daily is the website, and we look forward to having you on. And thank you so much for bringing some of the greatest guests that we have on the show. Michael, you have a good day.
Guys, have a great one.
We'll be right back after these messages. Don't go anywhere.
Stay tuned. We will be right back. In a thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families who struggle to maintain normal lives in a world where conspiracy theory and Bible prophecy collide. T.C. Joseph's viewpoint of alternative history and understanding of prophetic events will change your view of the world and the events on our horizon. Kirkus Review states, readers of end times fiction will be hard-pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. Extremely readable and fast-paced, Blue Wink Reviews boldly states, fans of Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series and Tom Perata's The Leftovers will find this thought-provoking series absolutely riveting. Order your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series from Amazon.com. Book 1, Precipice. Book 2, Pentecost. And Book 3, Penance.
Uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagmann. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagmann takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmannandHagmann.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to our second segment on this Monday edition. Joe Hagman here along with John Robertson. And we just got done talking with Michael Thompson from WorldNet Daily. And, you know, he's been working together with us, and WorldNet Daily has partnered up with us and just doing a fantastic job of bringing top-notch guests on who have very timely and interesting things to say, as well as the discount on books that our listeners get. So much there, and we could talk to Michael Thompson for a whole three-hour show. He had a family night tonight, so he took the time to go do that. And thank you, Michael. Folks, go to HagmanReport.com. Check out the stories that are up there. Peter Chowka has a story up there. St. Louis Blues, Gateway City erupts, and Democrat Socialists Own It. That is a very interesting story. It gives a synopsis of what happened and a timeline of events since the not guilty verdict for the police officer charged with murder on Friday, Jason Stokely. And it goes through, you know, what has happened with the three nights of violent protests and clashes with police. Yesterday, 80 arrested, five officers injured, and I'm wondering if they will continue through tonight. It doesn't look like it might, as some articles on Drudge indicate that the local businesses are taking a financial hit due to the unrest, as well as damages from people running around smashing windows and whatnot. So read that article that Peter Chowka wrote. It's very interesting, and we'll keep our eye on St. Louis. We also have a number of other interesting stories, John, and we have this half hour. We can take it wherever you want to go. But one article from Hagman Report I want to make sure people read is the first article I posted today. Christians beat FEMA, and in doing so, tame big government. This is from the newspaper, The Washington Times, and it talks about how faith-based groups and Christian nonprofits have provided more assistance and aid to hurricane victims than FEMA has and other mainstream charitable organizations. And this speaks to the nature of Christians, and not only that, Americans in general, as they band together to get things done and to help one another, specifically those who are in need of hurricane relief. We've seen a number of horror stories from the Red Cross to FEMA, people being kept in shelters for days, even weeks after the storm's over. The Florida Keys, part of that's still inaccessible. Rescue workers are actually being turned away from going down there by FEMA, by the Red Cross. And interestingly enough, there is another Hurricane Maria that is hitting the islands down there, and it'll be interesting to see where that goes. It jumped from a Category 1 today to a Category 4, hitting already battered islands by other Hurricane Irma. I'm sorry. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with this hurricane. So we're going to get into what Michael Thompson said. We're going to get into some of the latest news on Hagman Report, as well as other important stories. And then we have with us next hour, Republican Chick. She's going to be joining us for an hour. And then we're closing out the night with Dane Wigington of geoengineeringwatch.org. That's going to be a very interesting piece as we see this very heavy hurricane season. People are asking, is weather manipulation going on? And we're going to talk and get Dane's insight as to what he thinks is happening. But first, we're going to bring you a quick word from one of our sponsors.
Doug Hagman, on my way back from Branson, and I'm just so thankful for our staff at the Hagman Studios for handling things. Where do you find people like that? Where do you find such great people to take care of business? I'll tell you where. ZipRecruiter.com. You see, with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter does not depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. As a matter of fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within one day. There's no juggling emails or calls to your office, no hassle like that. You simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. Now, right now, as listeners to my show, you can post your jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, for free. just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Hagman. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Hagman. One more time to try it for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Hagman.
And welcome back to the Hagman Report on this Monday evening, September 18th, 2017. And a personal thanks to Doug Hagman. Thank you so much, Doug, for the honor to sit in this chair this evening and the previous three evenings last week. Joe, some grim observations from our friend Michael Thompson here in the first half hour.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when we look and examine the Trump presidency, you know, what exactly is going on in his mind, how much of his agenda that he ran on was just what Michael Thompson said and was pandering to a political base rather than actually wanting to accomplish these things as president. And, you know, these are questions we really can't answer. I don't know Donald Trump personally, and even people who do don't really comment on this. He seems genuine. At the same time, he does seem, it seems like either he did not have the agenda he ran on that he wants to implement, or he's being hindered, massively hindered, in being able to push some of these things through. But, you know, as Eric said during the break when we were asking, John asked my opinion and Eric's opinion, and Eric said, you know, this is what we asked for. We voted for Trump. So we get the good and the bad and the ugly, regardless of what that is. But I don't know. Yeah. I mean, just as many questions about what's going on in this administration as any before. And we see different strategies that have been employed, a huge rotating door of personnel that has changed since he's actually taken office. And he's only been in office a few months, what, 7-8 months? So a lot of questions. Again, you know, what are we going to see moving forward from here? Is Trump going to fulfill more of his campaign promises? We understand that the Congress is terrible right now. At the same time, we have an election coming up next year where some of these seats will be open. But as far as his agenda, you know, I'm going to remain optimistic and hope that he still gets things done. At the same time, I understand the opposition that he faces if he tries to even, whether he believes it or not, move forward the agenda that he ran on during the campaign.
Well, Joe, I'm in agreement with your sentiment overall. I too remain optimistic, and let's not forget that 60 plus million Americans voted for President Trump. The title of this evening's show, Reality versus the American Dream. And when I titled the show this afternoon, I had no idea what Michael Thompson was going to lead off with. And again, Michael, thank you for joining us. Coming up in the second hour, we have a debut guest. She goes by Republican Chick. Her name is Ximena Barato. And interestingly, Joe, as you know, she was born in Colombia and is a conservative, a young conservative. And we're going to get her take on the whole DACA thing as well. So let's side table that for a moment. But I want to encourage all of our listeners and viewers right now to just pause for a moment and ask the question that the title this evening implies. Today, September 18th, 2017, what is our reality versus the American dream? We know that more money is loaned and spent on higher education than even the home mortgage sector. We know that we are $20 trillion in debt, and that doesn't include all of the unfunded liabilities. Basically, to put that in layperson's terms, promises made by governments, municipal, state, and federal, that will ultimately be broken. And, you know, I was asking many guests last week, as we look at the end of the year, is it possible, Joe, that President Trump will give the American people a big, fat Christmas present, either the wall, tax reform, or perhaps, you know, one of the other major pieces of his agenda? And if I'm being perfectly honest, really just kind of bare-knuckle blunt right now, I'm concerned for the president. I really am. It seems like, how do I put this in words? It seems like we're missing a proactive approach. And as I mentioned to Michael Thompson, Joe, it feels like there's a significant miscommunication happening that didn't exist with candidate Trump. It felt like candidate Trump, much like Ronald Reagan 30 years ago, spoke directly to us. And many times listening to his speeches, Joe, I felt like, yeah, right on, you know, please cut our taxes. Please enable me, sir, to hold on to a few more bucks each year. Absolutely. Yep. Having lived in LA for 18 years, please do something about the massive flood of immigration. You know, remember, folks, immigration is not necessarily just a cultural issue. It's a financial one, too. What do you think, Joe?
No, absolutely it is. Not only immigration, but the massive amounts of social welfare programs that go to able-bodied people who are, you know, very capable of working. And, I mean, it's just, it's crazy to see that, you know, the national debt, the $20 trillion and climbing. You have, the taxes are just ridiculously high, and people need a break. I think the two main issues that were in the election cycle with Trump was immigration and healthcare, and also the economy is right up there with those other two issues, jobs specifically inside that economy subtitle. So, you know, the people want to see significant changes, not only in implementing and following, you know, legal immigration policies, but also getting some of their paycheck back in their pocket each and every week. We see that we have interesting growth numbers where there's either a whole lot of confidence in the market, or the market has gotten stronger over the last year, which I think it's more confidence than actually getting stronger. You have, 3% growth, which under Obama you only had 1.5%, and the 1.5% is basically what the kind of growth they had during the Great Depression. So as we see more jobs, as we see more confidence in the market, it'd be good to see some of the money coming back that Americans put in through taxes each and every week back into their pockets. Immigration, you know, there's a lot of different ways we can go with immigration, but just enforce the laws that are already on the books as far as immigration versus illegal immigration. We can't have sanctuary cities. We can't have massive amounts of illegal immigrants here, you know, taking part in the welfare system, taking part in Social Security. It's not fair to each and every person who immigrated here legally, and then to the American citizens if you're going to be giving these shortcuts. So you need to enforce the laws that are on the books, and in healthcare we know is a mess and Congress can't get anything done. But I think those are the three issues, you know, the economy, immigration, and healthcare, that people want to see some changes in and want to see them now. And we see that he's trying to get the wall done. We see that healthcare, he tried to put a repeal and replace through. It didn't work. The House and the Senate can't agree on, people even inside the House can't agree on a way to move healthcare forward. And we have taxes, which they said that they'd have something on the books by September or October, and it's looking like they're going to have to push that back as well. And this is, I expected this, gridlock in some time periods of the Trump presidency, but it seems like every time the deep state, gets a foot on Trump, they take a mile regardless. So it'll be interesting to see what happens between now and the end of the year, as we just closed out or are closing out the end of the business year at the end of this month.
Excellent points. You know, our previous guest, Michael Thompson, stated demography is destiny. And I like that. It's got nice alliteration. But essentially, it means that the people are our destiny. And you make an excellent point, Joe, with immigration versus illegal immigration. And, you know, I was thinking back to 2010, 2011, right about the time I first found the Hagman Report. I used to listen to Gerald Celente a lot. And we've had Mr. Celente on as a guest a number of times, and we will continue to do so. He, of course, is the founder and editor-in-chief of Trends Journal. But I remember, Joe, during the Arab Spring, Gerald Celente used to say that there will be an American Spring, you know, and I would venture to say, and I don't want to use hyperbole here, I don't want to exaggerate, but I would venture to say that if you look at all of the optics of the whole Antifa thing going back to Milo in February, up to St. Louis here over the last couple of days, when you look at the natural disasters, of course, those are not man-made per se. We'll talk with Dane Wigington in hour three about that. When you see essentially paralysis out of the White House, that's what's going on here, is that for a number of reasons, and it feels like those reasons are so convoluted, they're so symbiotic and intertwined, it's hard to pull them apart. You know, is it the revolving door? Is it what would be considered intrigue within the palace, palatial intrigue, you know, kind of the halls of Versailles type thing? Are there too many backstabbers among him? Is he getting poor advice from his family? You know, another thing that Michael Thompson mentioned is make the United Nations great again. Okay, so that would be hashtag Munga. Munga, Munga. That doesn't even sound good.
That's funny. No, you know that... See, I did see that he gave his first speech to the UN. I have not seen the speech or any read any of the articles on this, but one thing that I saw on Drudge here, it talks about the Trump and the UN saying, you know, Trump slams UN in first appearance. This in an article from the New York Post where it talks about Trump's first UN appearance used his inaugural address at the UN Monday to criticize the world body for not living up to its potential because of bureaucracy and urged member nations to reject business as usual and take bold stands. In recent years, the United Nations has not received its full potential because of bureaucracy and mismanagement, Trump said of the organization during a meeting on reforms. Despite what a ballooning budget and doubling of staff since 2012, Trump says we are not seeing the results in line with this investment. Now, one of the things about the UN, it's majority U.S. funds the majority of the UN's activities. And one thing I think Trump really should do in keeping a campaign promise, if he can't get us out of the UN, is to take away the United States taxpayer dollars that go to fund the UN and much of what they do. But I don't think he'll be allowed to do that or won't do it either way, if I had to guess. But, I mean, you really want to take away the bureaucracy, the power of that bureaucracy that he's complaining about, defund them. Then you'll begin to see results in them getting things done. I don't know, John, what you think about that, but they aren't going to change anything as long as they're, you know, continuing to collect huge paychecks and money and, you know, have these cushy jobs and titles where there are just a lot of talk.
Well, it's an interesting question, and of course, I would suggest to all of our listeners and viewers, do when you have time, and this really is worth looking into, do an extensive search, do a little citizen investigation into the history of the UN, the actual terra firma that the building is built on, who owned it, and who are some of the key influential people that actually formed the UN and its predecessor, the League of Nations. So it's been, in my opinion, a bureaucratic diplomatic mess since day one when you see countries like Syria and Saudi Arabia on the Human Rights Council. I mean, it's a mess. But going back to President Trump, Joe, I want to ask you, this may be overly simplistic, folks, but Joe, do you sense that rather than get a good bead on a single issue, okay, like with a deer rifle, get a good bead on it, it's one shot, it's one and done, that perhaps President Trump is taking too much of a shotgun approach here, that it seems like he's over here, he's over there, he's over here, he's over, and then, of course, with this revolving door issue, many of his key people who would have projects piled up sky high on their desks all of a sudden no longer have a desk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I don't know. we can sit here and try to figure out what is really the driving force behind Trump and his actions. I would say as a president, you have to have not a shotgun approach, but at least a shotgun approach with the understanding and knowledge to back it up with facts and good arguments if it comes to that. And while it seems like, you know, jumping around in all these different areas that he's dabbling in, at the same time, as a president, this is something you have to do. You throw some stuff, like the media, they throw stuff out there to see what sticks and they run with what sticks. I think the president to a large degree does that as well, to see what kind of responses he gets from media or Twitter when he, you know, throws these different ideas and things out. And we know, with Trump, he doesn't have that big filter on his mouth. You know, he goes where he wants to go, and he watches the after effects, whether they're positive or negative, no matter what. One thing that really bothers me and concerns me about Trump is I don't know if it's his ego, his personality, whatever part of him that needs validation from the media, or to sit there and watch news shows all day long and to tweet about him. That part bugs me a little bit. Don't mind the Twitter. But, you have to wonder, At what point do you stop worrying about the media and start worrying about your base? And maybe we'll see that if, you know, more people speak out against him not getting things done.
Well, you make an interesting point there. I've always felt, I don't have a problem, Joe, with the president using Twitter. It's always felt a little bit kitschy for the commander-in-chief, the chief executive, some people would say the leader of the free
right.
world. But a question that just popped into my mind, and I think it's really worth exploring here, Joe, do the American people need to come together en masse in a different way to support President Trump? I mean, let's be honest. He has no, Michael Thompson agreed with this supposition. He has no friends in the Beltway. He's got a rhino Congress, most of whom wanted to see Ted Cruz or even better, a big fat globalist like Jeb Bush get in. I mean, can you even believe Jeb Bush tried to run for president?
Yeah, I can.
And then you've got these kooky, crazy Democrats, you know, the whole Nancy Pelosi ilk all the way down to Maxine Waters. So if he has no support from the rhinos and he has no support from the Democrats, then where is his support, Joe?
Well, his support is not with the establishment people in Washington. His support is with the American people individually. And we have to understand that the reality of these people in Washington, D.C. is completely separate from the reality of the rest of the country out there. And these people are corrupt to their core, have no sense of you know, hard work and you know, regular life. But what one thing is interesting is the amount of polls that are done that show how many of his supporters will stand by him no matter what. And I think that's a good indicator to a degree about where his support will be regardless of the way his opinions go either way. At the same time, he needs to get things done that he promised he would to his base. Otherwise, they could abandon him in the next election cycle. And, you know, presidents still have to go through primaries. He's not guaranteed to be the nominee in 2020. So he's going to have to get some things done in order to regain that respect of all the supporters that made it possible for him to vote or for him to be president who voted in the 2016 election. And on the other side of that election was Hillary Clinton, who somehow is still in the news. And the only reason I'm bringing it up is just because of this, John. Hillary, in an interview with NPR today, is questioning the legitimacy of the 2016 election results and told the interviewer that she would not rule out legally challenging the election win of President Trump, saying that I would not rule it out, although there is no legal path moving forward. Challenging election results at this point would be unprecedented. But she goes on to say, scholars, academics, and other people have argued that it would be possible. I don't think they're on strong ground, but people are making those arguments, and I just don't think we have a mechanism, Clinton said. Again, yeah, she just won't go away.
No, she certainly won't. You know, I think Hillary Clinton's spending some late nights with the Chardonnay, and she's listening to that old Warren Zevon song, Lawyers, Guns, and Money. I think that's about where her head is at. But, you know, Joe,
she's out of her mind.
The primary problem here this evening, this Monday evening, September 18th, is that we already have one major campaign promise broken by President Trump. And I want to reiterate, folks, I still stand behind the president, and I remain optimistic. I want him to succeed. I want to see him make America great again. It's amazing that we have somebody who's really promised to put America first standing in after 24 years of globalism in the White House. But Joe, we already have one campaign promise broke, and that is that Hillary Clinton is free to talk to NPR.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. There was another article where she did today where she talked about Hillary had no idea why people were chanting lock her up during the election. And she goes on to tell NPR, the same interview that she gave about possibly challenging the election results, she goes on to say, the first time I was actually aware of hearing lock her up was at the Republican convention. I think it went on before that. I did not pay a lot of attention to it and thought, okay, fine, he's whipping up crowds, he's throwing them red meat, and I'm exhibition A. But when they brought it inside to their convention so that it became, in effect, part of the historic record of the general election, I was stunned. I thought, what are they talking about? And why are they saying this? Because Clinton has no idea why anybody would want her in jail.
Tech Eric is choking on his,
rightfully so.
If we go dark, ladies and gentlemen, it's simply because our production manager and studio IT Tech Eric is dead.
She goes on to say that it was not only wrong because obviously there was no basis for it, but it was just politics at the highest level. Affected by the most dangerous partisan hyperbole, Clinton said. So I think that's pretty funny. You know, we are amazed every time we hear how arrogant and crazy she is. But every time she opens her mouth and does another interview, even more craziness comes out. I think she's trying to stay relevant, stay in the news cycle. I don't know.
Well, it's bringing a certain dark joy to our lives, folks. We'll be right back. Hagman Report.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right, you need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greeninnovative.com. That's greeninnovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's smoke. Fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com. PreciousTimberProfits.com.